Okay, thanks very much. Let me start, of course, by thanking the organizers for the invitation. It's a great pleasure to be back at Perimeter and also for putting this meeting together. I think it's been very exciting and inspiring so far already. This morning, there was a lot of controversy, I guess. So I hope that this talk will be very non-controversial compared to that. So I think a lot of the things I will present will be much more obviously defined, and well, maybe there will be some controversy that I'm not foreseeing yet. So I'm going to stay within the context of quantum cosmology, which I guess has been the dominating theme today, but I'll slightly change gears and I'll talk about models that implement a kind of bounce, which is something I guess that hasn't been discussed very much, or only very superficially. But it's really a bounce in the quantum theory. So it's a transition of a collapsing to an expanding universe that should be described in terms of a quantum transition, and therefore, as Claudio told us yesterday, in terms of a two-point function, and I will use the Feynman propagator, but that's something we can talk about. And the idea is really that studying such a transition from the perspective of the quantum theory, even in this mini superspace context, can already imply consistency conditions on the cosmological model you are studying just from looking at whether there is such a well-defined picture for this kind of quantum transition. So that's the question I will be exploring. This is a small kind of subset of results that Leal and I obtained in these two papers, where you will find many more details and also some other cases that I won't be able to cover here because of lack of time, obviously. So I really just focus on one aspect, which is basically the case of spatial curvature in these cosmological models. So a brief outline of the talk. I will just give some very short comments here motivating this approach. And already tell you, give you the punchline basically of what the results are, at least in this kind of context that I'm studying here. And then in this part two, I'm basically introducing this cosmological model that I'm interested in. So there is a theory for gravity, which I would call Dirac gravity. Roberto has just arrived. He's taught me this, that it's basically a version of GR that was written down by Dirac, I guess. And I will show that this is just an extension, a very straightforward extension of general relativity, in which you add an extra field to make it locally conformally invariant, so Weyl invariant. But locally is really indistinguishable from GR in a way that I will make clear. And the only purpose really of introducing this slightly more general version of GR is to have already a classical picture of a bounce, which can be non-singular in a way that I will make clear. So it doesn't have the usual singularities of GR necessarily. The matter is conformal matter, so it's a radiation fluid, and it's a bunch of conformally coupled scalar fields. So this is fairly standard. And that basically constitutes the cosmological model that I'm looking at. So this is actually the main part of the talk, just introducing this model at the classical level and showing the classical solutions, which you can work out very nicely and quite easily. Then I'm going to turn to the quantum theory, and I'm going to look at possibility of quantum transitions across this bounds described by the Feynman propagator. And so I will also show a path integral here in this section. Just the one we've seen already in previous talks many times to define the Feynman propagator. And just the properties of this propagator will kind of lead me to this question here, whether the open FLRW universe can be made consistent in this quantum theory. And I will argue that there's basically an issue there, which seems to kind of disfavor this open model compared to the usual flat FLRW universe. And I'll just summarize. So this is just some text, basically introducing the general ideas. As you all know, if we have classical GR and we have standard matter, which kind of preserves the null energy condition, it seems that the conclusion that the universe started in a Big Bang singularity is absolutely inevitable, right? And so you may find that unsatisfactory because we would really like to explain the origin of the universe. And so we need to go beyond this setting. And so bounce models have long been studied as an alternative to the Big Bang picture. Of course, you can play around at the classical level with GR, with the matter fields. You can introduce some more exotic matter fields that violate the null energy condition. And that's done by many people. But I want to explore the idea that there's really quantum physics which can describe this bounce within what I would call standard physics. So no such modifications. And as I said, here the matter content that I'm focusing on is radiation and scalars, which can be minimally or conformally coupled. And basically what we showed was that there is indeed in such models in quantum cosmology what we call a perfect bounce. So there can be a quantum transition from a collapsing to an expanding universe, which is regular and unambiguous across what would be the classical singularity. So in some sense, the singularity actually remains invisible in this transition. And now you'd like to make this consistent in a way that I will make clearer. And as I said, you can use that to obtain constraints for cosmology and here for spatial curvature. And clearly, this is something that we can never understand in classical cosmology alone. So it makes a case for these kind of quantum models. OK, so now let me be a bit more concrete here. So that's this way of making general relativity Weyl invariant, which many of you will be well familiar with, but maybe some of you have never seen before. So I'm introducing it here. So this would be the Einstein-Hilbert action, as you are familiar with it, in terms of some metric g tilde. And now you can just rewrite g tilde in terms of two new fields. So there's another metric g, there's the scalar phi, and this is just a numerical factor to get the correct units. And so you just substitute this, and you end up with this action here. So this looks like a conformally coupled scalar field, only that has a wrong sign kinetic term. So it looks like it's a ghost. Obviously, this now has this Weyl invariance here, right? As you can see very directly, I can multiply g by omega squared, and I can multiply phi by omega to the minus 1, where omega is any function that doesn't vanish anywhere. And that's going to be a symmetry of this theory. And so if I have a solution of this Dirac gravity, and it has the property that phi doesn't go through 0 anywhere, then, of course, I can sort of just get rid of phi by this kind of conformal transformation, set it to a constant, and go back to gr. And conversely, I can start with a gr solution, and I can just apply such a conformal transformation to lift it, in a sense, to this Dirac gravity. So the point of doing this, and again, this has been discussed by many people, is that you can now shift certain kinds of singularities in the metric into this field phi, right? So in particular, if I have a metric whose singularities are only in the conformal factor, typically the conformal factor going to 0 somewhere, so in particular something that's conformally flat, I can move this singularity into this field phi, and I can make this metric regular or even flat in the conformally flat case by using this Weyl invariance. Yes?
Of course, this is in pure gravity. If I couple to matter, mm-hmm. then there's a distinction, right? Mm-hmm. I presumably couple to one of the metrics, not the other.
Mm-hmm. Right. But you can start with any sort of minimally coupled theory, of course, and also lift it to this setting by introducing appropriate factors of this field phi, and basically getting rid of dimensionful parameters.
Right, but then I make the matter of Lagrangian more complicated.
That's true, yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. OK. And so if we just want to do cosmology, we have an homogeneous isotropic metric. We can write it in this form here. So I've just pulled out a scale factor here. I still have this conformal lapse here, nc. So that was 1, then t is just conformal time. More generally, I'm allowing this kind of lapse here. And hij is just a metric of constant curvature. And then, as I said, basically, you can exploit this symmetry, this Weyl symmetry, to set A to a constant and make phi time dependent, right? And so basically what you're doing there is you now have a reformulation of the usual physics of cosmology where the universe doesn't expand, but the units change in time, right? So the universe is completely static, but phi gives you units that change in time, right? And so why am I doing this? This seems a bit trivial, but the point is really, as I said, phi can now cross 0, phi can become negative or positive, and so I can extend solutions through this GR singularity. And in particular, I will use phi as a sort of time variable, basically, which can then run from negative to positive values, unlike the usual scale factor, which you would think of as only positive. And again, this would be the opposite of this gauge, where you get rid of this field by just setting phi squared to a constant. And then, of course, G Newton would be time independent. Right? So this is hopefully clear. So here I just have this reformulation of cosmology where kind of the units change rather than the universe expanding. But I haven't really done anything too deep here. So in this case, in which the scale factor is constant, you can write down your mini superspace action, and it takes this form here. So phi, morally speaking, is just what would normally be the scale factor, of course. I've shifted everything into this field phi. So it has this negative kinetic term, and this would come from the spatial curvature here, this quadratic term. And here I have this v0, which is just the volume of 3-space, just from integrating over my spatial slice. People often set this to 1, but I like to keep this v0 also for dimensional reasons. This should really be a volume, but you can set it to 1 if you want. And now we couple this conformally invariant matter. We have radiation fluid, which is characterized by this energy density rho, and we have the conformally coupled scalar. So any number m is just any number of these scalars, and this is your total action, right? So here the scalars, of course, come with a correct sign kinetic term, and here they also couple to the spatial curvature through this conformal coupling, and the fluid just enters linearly here through the energy density, and then you have a constraint which tells you that rho is constant in time. So this is again an artifact of this gauge, right? Space doesn't expand, so rho also is just a constant in time. It doesn't dilute with the expansion of space. And so that's just this cosmological model, but now if you stare at this, you can already tell that this is essentially a massive relativistic particle in some m plus 1 dimensional Minkowski space, right? So that's the usual kinetic term. This is a quadratic potential that this particle is moving in, and this rho would just be the mass of the particle. Okay, so this is really a very simple mechanical system whose quantum theory is well understood, and we can kind of rederive things here from this kind of path integral perspective. Yeah, these are just some comments. I mean, this is all fairly obvious for the cosmologists, but the point is just that the relative contribution of these three components is, of course, different with the cosmological evolution, right? Near the singularity, and here this is the would-be singularity where this phi field is zero, the dominant component is the kinetic energy in the scalars, which basically grows without bound, and it drives the scalars eventually to super Planckian field values. And the point is that because of this conformal coupling here, the coefficient of the Ricci scalar and the action ultimately becomes negative, right? Because the conformal coupling contributes with the opposite sign to the Einstein-Hilbert term, and so you might call this anti-gravity. This is certainly a regime which doesn't really have a very clear classical interpretation at all, because these fields just run off into the super Planckian regime. But clearly this is what happens classically. Then away from the singularity, you have this radiation component which dominates in some intermediate regime. This is also what happens in our universe, of course. And spatial curvature would dominate at very early or late times, right? And so in particular, if you have negative curvature, this will kind of accelerate the expansion of the universe. So it will accelerate the growth in this field phi. And the point is that because you have this non-minimal coupling to the scalars, also this basically repulsive potential can basically drive the scalars into these super Planckian field values, and therefore into this strange anti-gravity regime. And that's exactly what will become problematic in the quantum theory. Here's just another picture to make this a bit clearer. So these phi and chi fields really correspond to coordinates in some field space, which basically is just a Minkowski space. Here I've just rescaled them to give them the correct physical dimensions of length. So you can introduce these x alpha, which are basically then really just Minkowski space coordinates. And the energy in this energy density of this radiation fluid basically gives you the mass of the universe, right? Which is basically just the total energy up to this factor of 2. Okay? And so here in this picture, I'm just showing you, so phi equals 0 again would just be the classical singularity, right? So you have this phi negative and phi positive regime. You have this light cone, and inside the light cone, of course, phi squared dominates over these conformally coupled scalars. So that would be the kind of physically well-behaved regime in some sense. And out here, these scalars dominate, and you have anti-gravity. Okay? And so if you, for example, if you're in the flat FLRW case, there is no potential, and you all know what a massive particle does, just in Minkowski space, it will just move on straight lines that are less than 45 degrees, right? So I can just draw an arbitrary straight line here, and basically, as long as they're time-like, get all the classical solutions. And I know that the classical solutions will always end up in this light cone here and here asymptotically. So I have, at the classical level, I have this kind of bounce picture where the universe started off somewhere in here. Maybe it makes some excursion into this anti-gravity phase for some finite amount of time. But then ultimately, I come back here and I kind of asymptote to a very large kind of nice classical universe. Of course, if you have this quadratic potential, things are a bit more difficult. And the particle would really move under the influence of this additional force, if you want, that comes from the spatial curvature. OK. Any questions about the classical part? I guess it's quite straightforward. But now the point is to look at the quantum theory. So as I said, I'm now looking at the Feynman propagator here. And I want to describe the transition of a universe that starts somewhere in this a negative phi region here and ends up in this positive phi region here. And that's what I'm going to consider as basically the quantum bounce that, that I'm interested in. And so the object that I'm computing to describe that is the Feynman propagator. There's been various arguments discussed in the meeting for and against it, which I won't repeat here, and we can discuss it. But clearly, this phi field in this model just gives you directly a time variable that then you just use to basically introduce a notion of time ordering. And I don't know if that has any operational meaning, but clearly this is something you can prescribe just to say that sort of this is a universe going forward in time, and it can be clearly distinguished from one that goes backward in time. Okay, so I'm just using the fact.
Like on Lost and something.
Yeah.
Aside from this scalar, conformal scalar field, you have no matter, is that right?
So I have this phi field, which is kind of just this Stückelberg field that gives me the Weyl invariance.
Yes, but aside from it.
And then I'm coupling also conformally coupled, I'm introducing conformally coupled scalars.
Oh, that's what
so that was the number m here. So m can be anything you like, but I take it to be at least one to have an interesting model.
And but, the radiation as well.
Yes, and the radiation, that's right. Radiation is also there.
And where is the radiation?
That's this term here. It's just a linear term
so
in the energy.
Sort of classically, so to speak, or it's just 1 over a cubed? I mean, what is...
Iteration to the fourth.
Well,
to the fourth, sorry.
You can do it, probably. We actually do the budget theory.
Yeah, I mean, this is a mini superspace model, so I'm adding the matter components that I like to have, and I get this action.
Right.
Yeah, for the purpose of this talk, I'm just staying in mini superspace.
So your classical solution just looks like a radiation-dominated universe.
Mm-hmm. With these conformally coupled scalars. Right. And because I've introduced this phi field, I can basically go through the singularity, where normally you'd say you'd have to stop here, right? Because there's a singularity. I'm using this trick to basically shift the singularity that I would have in GR into the zero of this phi field. If you're happy with a scale factor going through zero and being negative and positive on both sides, you could do that within GR. But then this is a kind of slightly more sort of elegant way of doing that, by having this phi field. OK, more questions?
So here phi acts as a clock.
Yeah, exactly. It's just the time variable in your Minkowski space, in some sense, in the field space. And it's also the scale factor, in some sense, right? So the scale factor can often serve as some kind of clock in cosmological models.
Mm-hmm. The geometry does become singular.
No, because so I'm in this Dirac gravity setting, right, where I have conformal symmetry. So if I start with this kind of metric here, I can just set this to a constant, right? I'm just setting the scale factor to a constant. I'm moving the normal time evolution into this phi field. And so the metric is just fixed. I mean, apart from this lapse, which of course is just gauge. But the universe doesn't expand or contract in this gauge because you've shifted everything into the phi field. Mm-hmm.
There must be some, if you wrote equations of motion for matter or something, the fact that phi is going to zero must influence them so that something becomes unclear or ambiguous or something.
When you introduce gravitational waves of isotropy.
Perturbations diverge typically, yeah. Perturbations diverge as phi goes to zero. Yeah. Because you can see it from here in some sense, right? So if you go to the usual Einstein gauge, your phi squared is 1 over the Newton constant. So in a different gauge, the units, well, whatever value phi takes, it basically sets the units of Newton's constant. So phi goes to 0, basically g goes to infinity in these different units. So you can see that something is happening there to the perturbations. So that's another way of seeing that. So yeah, so I don't have time. I probably also almost out of time already, but but yeah, so I just wanted to discuss the mini superspace case here.
12 minutes.
Oh, good. That's very good. All right. So if we're all happy with kind of writing down the Feynman propagator, that's basically what I'm doing here. So this is just a transition of some initial universe. So again, just to remind you, I introduced these x, alpha, and m variables just to make the analogy with the relativistic particle even clearer. And these x alphas are just these fields, and m is the radiation energy density. So I'm calculating this kind of two-point function. This is just the standard phase-space path integral. And here, basically, you just have the Hamiltonian constraint for this model, right? Which, again, you see more explicitly in these variables, is just a relativistic particle in a quadratic potential where m is the mass. Right, so you see that the p and x integrals are just quadratic here, and the m and phi integrals are really quite trivial because phi is just a Lagrange multiplier here, and m is constrained to be a constant, so I'm just getting this delta function here, and I can do the x and p integrals, and I just end up with this expression here, which is the usual expression for a quadratic potential, so a harmonic oscillator. Or if this is negative, some kind of upside-down harmonic oscillator. And you're left with this tau integral, which is of course, this proper time integral that has been discussed already in other talks. And for, well, if kappa was 0, this is just a free particle, so you can even do this explicitly. If kappa is non-zero, then in general, you have to do a saddle point approximation for this proper time integral. Okay? But that's basically what we did. So if kappa is 0, then it's just the Feynman propagator that you all know, that you can find in the textbooks, corresponding to a massive particle in Minkowski space-time. So that's just the explicit expression here. So this is a Hankel function. And the argument is S, which is kind of this expression here. So there's an I epsilon, basically because this diverges on the light cone. And so this I epsilon tells you where to approach, from which direction you have to approach the light cone in the complex plane. And as you all know, this propagator falls off for space-like separations, right? And that's just consistent with the fact that the real classical solutions are always time-like. So of course, if I want a space-like solution, I have to become complex, and this gives me this exponential fall-off. And that's very nice. That's how we think of that's what we think of as some kind of causality. And so the classical property was what I already showed you. Any solution has to start and end inside of this light cone, which are these kind of well-behaved regions. And quantum mechanically, I can do an excursion into this kind of anti-gravity, but it's exponentially suppressed. So that's kind of consistent with the classical theory. But things change very much once you have this negative spatial curvature, because now you have a repulsive quadratic potential. And so this potential can drive you off into this anti-gravity region just because it's a repulsive force, which basically then dominates over the positive mass. And if you want, you can just look at these explicit classical solutions here. So x1 and x2 are basically connected to the initial conditions, and the constraint just tells you that the dot product is equal to 1/4. And clearly, I can satisfy that by time-like or space-like choices. And there are these solutions, for example, where both x1 and x2 are space-like. So what these basically do is they just come, they start somewhere here. They kind of approach the origin, then turn around and go back. And so they are only in this anti-gravity region, even when in this Einstein gauge, the curvature would be quite low, actually. So these are clearly very unphysical. And so classically, you would, of course, exclude them by just choosing the correct initial conditions, and you can do that, but quantum mechanically, clearly that's not possible. So you might already expect that these anti-gravity solutions contribute to the quantum transitions as described by the propagator. right? And so the Feynman propagator, as I said, can be computed at least in a saddle point approximation for this proper time integral. And if I take one of the arguments to plus infinity, holding the other one fixed, I get something like this. So there's really an oscillatory factor here, and this prefactor, which kind of falls off, but just very slowly, right? So there's nothing like the exponential fall off that we have in the flat case. And so if I start with some nice, well-behaved initial state, for example, some wave packet, and I propagate it using this negative curvature model, I would come to the conclusion that I really have to propagate my state into very large space-like distances. And I would end up with something that doesn't really seem to have any classical interpretation, because it would be some superposition of things that are out here and things that are somehow in the light cone. So this kind of picture of having a quantum bounce described by such a transition would then no longer be viable. And this is very different from the flat case. OK, so that basically brings me to the conclusions. We're studying a bounce here in the quantum theory, just in the context of a mini superspace model described by the Feynman propagator. The model is just including radiation and these conformally coupled scalars as matter. And then you have the possibility of an anti-gravity phase in which these scalars basically become super Planckian. That's clearly something you can't really interpret in physical terms. In the flat case, such a phase basically only exists for a finite amount of time, and you will always return inside the light cone. And this is true classically and quantum mechanically. And once you have negative curvature, however, you have this repulsive potential. And it seems quantum mechanically unavoidable that the initial state will be propagated into something that sort of runs off into these directions. And so clearly that would kind of put doubts on this consistency of this kind of quantum bounce. So that's quite interesting, because then this is a very simple model, but this basically would lead you to very different conclusions for the flat and the open cases, which of course classically seem to be fine. Yeah, thank you.
Questions?
Do you also quantize fluid universal waters?
Go ahead.
Do you quantize fluid universe?
Yeah, so I have a mini superspace model.
How can you quantize fluid universe? It has infinite action. You have to take into account volume factor.
You take it on a torus. I mean, you can cut it off.
There should be parameter from the torus.
Yeah, so I have this thing here, right? So you have there's a three volume of space, and it's some number, and you have it here. And okay. Clearly affects the properties of the model, and you have to take it finite, of course. Yeah.
Jean-Luc?
Yeah, if you think about the actual universe, it will have some regions which have a little bit positive curvature, a little bit negative curvature. How would that evolve?
It's a very good question, yeah. I guess it's a general question of how you can kind of extrapolate from mini superspace models to inhomogeneous models. I mean, I would expect in general that these kind of instabilities would be present, of course, even in this more general case.
Do you think you have some regions that bounce, some regions that bounce?
I guess in general you would expect that, yeah. I mean, I don't have a good answer. This is a question that people always ask in kind of quantum cosmology bounce models, right? What happens if the bounce happens locally somehow? And I don't really know how to do that in general.
Other questions?
Maybe I missed. Did you say the k equals zero, the flat model, and the positive k were the same, behaved the same?
So I didn't discuss the positive k. The positive k is an attractive potential that just makes you recollapse, right? It's a harmonic oscillator, and you can go out into this direction and recollapse, or you can go out into this direction and recollapse.
That's viable according to your. Is that a viable
bounce? I mean, it depends on what your criteria are, but it certainly seems less problematic. I mean, there's not the possibility that I'm just running off to these kind of infinite super Planckian field values. So that's excluded, certainly, for that case.
The closed one obviously doesn't have asymptotic states
right.
In the same sense as the flat one.
No.
That's right.
It wouldn't, yeah.
Yeah. So if you demand that, then you would also be in trouble.
If you hope to use it to describe an expanding universe like ours, it seems problematic.
Oh, but I mean, ours could be closed. It's just a question of the
curvature. Well, yeah, but then you have to add in more terms and so on. So
certainly this
doesn't have asymptotic states. That's
yeah, that's true.
That's the simple statement.
And certainly this argument
is to make this.
You can basically see it here, that basically if I make kappa a positive, I get an exponential falloff in the propagator. So
it doesn't go
so it,
to
you don't have this problem anymore, yeah, in the way I was describing. It has, yeah.
It's a different pathology.
Yeah.
Which is?
Good. Which is, well, no, thanks very much.